thank you all again for being here. We heard that sometimes Srila Prabhupada said there was some social function and Krishna came, but he came without Radharani, so the devotees told him to go away. Don't come unless you bring Srimati Radharani. Because our philosophy is that Krishna is never alone. Krishna is always with his energies. Parasya Shakti or Vidaiva Shriyate. This Krishna consciousness philosophy is distinct in many ways from other philosophical ideas about God. I have two distinctions in mind, but let's deal with the first one first. There's a whole idea out there that God is energy. God is energy. But that fails to take into account that energy comes from someplace. When we have solar energy, it comes from the sun. When we have other forms of energy, electrical energy comes from a powerhouse. So energy implies even your own energy, that you exert the energy. I put a lot of energy into this. So there's the energy in the person who's displaying the energy. So when we speak of energy, it implies that there's an energetic source. And that energetic source is God. God without energies is impersonal. Oh yeah, I should have asked also if we can hold the photos. We'll have a special photo op later or something. The curtains will open again, and that's your photo opportunity. You don't want to shoot me. God without energy is impersonal. God without energy is really nothing. If you take the sun and strip it of its energies, you strip it of sunlight, heat, and light, you don't have a sun anymore. And if you have only sunlight and you don't have a sun, then that's strange. That doesn't work either. We have the sunshine and we have the sun. Then it's complete. Then it's complete. So when we have God and God's energies, then it's complete. So Radha Krishna means Krishna with his supreme pleasure energy. God also, we have a God. Yes, anyway, we visit that. But God is complete with his variegated energies. And the science of Krishna is the science of Krishna and his energies. What is God? What are his energies? There's another theological debate that goes on in the modern context. Very modern context, actually. Is God a he or is God a she? Why should God be he? That's a patriarchally concocted idea of God, which is manifestly unjust to half the population of the world. And why should God not be a she? Okay. I guess if she became predominant, then the question would maybe go the other way. Why should God not be a he? And, of course, this is all rooted in the bodily concept of life. The rooters, actually, those who are rooting for God to be she, are mostly women. And some friends of women. And the hold the line, God is he, people, are men, and okay, there's women there also, the traditional adherents of biblical faith and so on. But whichever way we're looking, so often we're thinking that God is male or God is female in terms because I'm something. We're thinking that God must be something like us, or we're thinking that we've projected our ideas onto God, or that God actually is a projection of our ideas. Actually, there's no God, but God is something that we create, and we create him. We create God in our image as either a he or a she or what have you. But the Gaudiya conception of life is both fair and complete and also charming. That God is, yes, male, but not lacking in his female counterpart. That makes Krishna all attractive. That he's not just alone. He's not just sitting on a throne and maybe throwing an occasional thunderbolt or smiting a few people or sending visiting curses on the damned. But ultimately God is not doing anything. Purasha Shaktir Vidhidaiva Shriyate. The Vedic literature says that the definition of God is that he has nothing to do. We all have to do something. We have to go to work. We have to perform our duties. We have to take care of the kids. So we have to take care of whatever it is. We all have to do something. But there's nothing that God has to do. Natasya Karyam. Karyam. He's completely independent. He can do as he likes. That's God. There's so much to be done in terms of the world and the living beings in the world and the running of the world and the so many things that happen in the world. But Krishna doesn't personally have to do that. For that, Krishna expands himself. By his energies, he can take Vistavyaham Idam Krishnam Ekam Sena Stitojaka. Krishna says, by one fraction of my energy, I take care of the whole material world. By one fraction. Taking care of this material world, this business, is one fraction of my energy. And that energy is working automatically. Svabhaviki Gamma Galactic. All right, so now we've got the whole material world taken care of. So now God has nothing to do. But his real business is enjoyment. God is, another name is Purushottam, the supreme enjoyer. The supreme enjoyer. So what is his enjoyment? If we want to enjoy, we call up our friend, hi, what you doing? You doing anything? No, not doing anything. Well, why don't we do something? We call up your girlfriend. Hi, what's happening? Or your boyfriend, whatever. We get together and we do something. And we're dependent. If my friends are all out of town, then it's boring. But we're a kid, his PlayStation broke and now he's bummed out. He needs something for enjoyment. But Krishna, when he wants to enjoy, he enjoys by himself. Swarat means that he doesn't depend on anyone else. But we all depend on others. But Krishna, Swarat, he enjoys by himself. how does he enjoy it? By expanding his energies. Energy is not different from Krishna. Shakti, shakti, mati, yoga. Just as the sun is not different from the sunshine. You can't draw a line and say, okay, sun is okay, sunshine is not okay. It's all integrated. So the sunshine is all part of the sun. So Krishna's energies are part of Krishna. From one point, the energies are analyzed this way. Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta Kshetra Gyatya Tita Para Avidya Karma Sangyanga Tritiya Shakti Vishuddha. What are the energies? There's the spiritual energy, the energy that manifests the whole spiritual world. And there's the material energy, or there's the marginal energy, the living being. Kshetra Gyatya Tita Para. Why we're marginal, we'll come to that in a moment. And the third energy is the energy of the material world, where ignorance and hard work predominate. We all go to school. Why? Because we don't know anything. We have to, the United States government has a CIA to gather information because we don't know what's going on. We're constitutionally in the dark. And we have to go to school or conduct investigations or do something to inquire from others to find out what's happening. So the prevailing mode of material nature, the prevailing aspect, is it's a place where ignorance prevails. And we have to do something to try to get past. It's not that we're all enlightened. As long as nothing happens, we all know everything. We're all in the dark unless we find some way to get knowledge. The vidya and karma. And the material world is the world where everybody's working. I mean, it's not a question that I love to work. People say, I love my work, but if I don't pay you that work that you love so much, you will abandon. Anything that we want to, even the things that, apart from our professional work, whatever we want to achieve, it's work. None of us really wants to work. But we're forced to work. That's the material world. So that's due to the external energy or material energy of God. The spiritual energy, there's no work, and there's full knowledge. And material, just as in the sky and the sunshine, it's all bright and it's all warm. And where there's no sunshine, it's all cold and it's all dark. So this is the cold, dark section of the material world. Well, where everybody has to work hard and where ignorance is prevailing. And the living beings are in the middle. When we look toward matter, we get caught by matter. And when we look toward spirit, we get caught by spirit. When we look toward Krishna, we go toward Krishna. And when we look away from Krishna, away. So we're like sand on the beach. Sometimes it's covered by the water and sometimes it's uncovered. The word described as marginal, we're right on the line. And the business of the Krishna consciousness movement is to turn us that way, toward Krishna, not away from Krishna. Away from Krishna is painful and unhappy. And toward Krishna is happy. Why is it happy? Because Krishna has his pleasure energy. That pleasure energy has two functions. To give pleasure to Krishna and to give pleasure to Krishna's devotees. Anandamaya Vyasa, the nature of the Absolute, is to be full of pleasure. Why is he full of pleasure? Because he has an energy for pleasure. That's called Mahadhyasha. Shakti means energy, and Allahabha means happiness. So Allahabha Shakti means potency for happiness, potency for pleasure. So Krishna has the capability to be full of pleasure, to be happy by himself, by his own energy. And he has the capability to give pleasure to others. How does he give pleasure? On the spiritual platform, pleasure comes from serving Krishna. The pleasure energy of Krishna is the energy of devotional service. Srimati Radharani is the personified pleasure energy of Krishna. How does she give pleasure to Krishna? By serving Krishna. By serving Krishna. If someone wants to serve us, we become happy. In business, when we I'm getting out of this company, I'm going to work for another company, because they give lousy service to the customers. Here they care about the customers, they give nice service. I'm not going to do business with them anymore. Customer service is lousy. We want good service. We want to be served by our businesses we deal with, our politicians. We want somebody who will serve us. And the politician advertises that, "I just want to serve you. I'll give you better service." The husband or wife, "I just want to make you happy. I just want to make you happy. And if you don't make me happy, it's over." So we like to be served. Why do we want to be served? Because that's there in Krishna. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer of service. And Srimati Radharani is the supreme provider of service. Her life consists of serving Krishna. And Krishna reciprocates with service. With Krishna, it's not just taking service, but it's reciprocation. The whole nature of the Absolute Truth is reciprocal. The Absolute Truth is only one, only energy. There's no reciprocation. But the energy and the source of the energy are reciprocating all this. Radharani is serving Krishna, giving happiness to Krishna. Krishna is giving happiness to Radharani also. And that's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita in a very nice way as being a dynamic process. That Krishna, Radharani and her associates, her expansions, the gopis, they're pleasing Krishna. They see how beautiful Krishna is and they become pleased. Then by being pleased, they become more beautiful. Then by seeing the increased beauty of Krishna, Radharani and the gopis, then Krishna becomes more pleased. He becomes more beautiful. Seeing the increased beauty and happiness of Krishna, the gopis become more beautiful and more happy. Seeing the increased happiness and beauty of the gopis, Krishna becomes, and it goes on and on. It doesn't end. It's not, okay, we've reached the top. It just goes on and on and on. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Anandam the Divartana. The ocean of bliss that increases. Prabhupada used to say, your Atlantic Ocean, Pacific Ocean, they don't increase. Or we'd be in trouble. But this ocean, the ocean of happiness, knows no limits. Material happiness is limited and diminishing. We all know about the point of diminishing returns. We do something for happiness, and it gives us happiness for some time, and then it starts to go down. That's the nature of material happiness. It must diminish. Whatever makes you happy in this material world will diminish. it's money, you can make more and more money and become less and less satisfied by it. If it's sex, you can have more and more of it and become less and less happy about it. Or you can have more and more of it until you reach the point where you can't have more and more of it. You can have less and less of it. Then that becomes a source of frustration and happiness. If it's intellectual activity, it gets to a point where talk. It becomes finally unrewarding. Or it starts off as a great intellectual adventure, and then it winds up with the business of publishing another paper and making sure that you're on the tenure track and fighting with your colleagues and all of that. The pleasure of the material world is material pleasures is an oxymoron. It's just, even if we think it's there, it goes down. But finally, it comes to the point of death, and what's the pleasure in that? And all our pleasures love that. We could go through a whole essay about the nature of material pleasure, but honest people already know, and especially, I think everyone here has heard this before, that the material world is not a carnival. And even carnivals become, I think, the saddest place I ever went in my life. When I was a kid, one of my friends dragged me out to Coney Island. I lived out in New Jersey. First of all, it was a long train ride. Finally, we reached Coney Island, and it was the most depressing place I'd ever been. You know, all these unhealthy people who come there to somehow have a good time. And now that they were there, they had to be having a good time, even if they weren't having a good time. It was so depressing. All right, we go up in a thing, and then it drops down, and she wasn't that funny, and that was really great. But the spiritual world is not like that. It's not the place where we have to psych ourselves into thinking that we're having a good time, or where we really are having a good time for 15 minutes. It's not like that. It's constitutionally joyful. Krishna's by nature, Anandamoy, is full of pleasure, and everyone who associates with Krishna is full of pleasure. They're full of pleasure, right? Because they're with Krishna. You're in touch with the electric wire, you're electrified. They're in touch with Krishna. So they're joyful. They're joyful. And the business of the living beings here, okay, here there's some semblance of pleasure. There is an appearance of pleasure, definitely. But it's a semblance. It's a reflection. Even it's a mirage. You go chasing after it, and when you finally get there, it's not there. Very famously, one American writer was complaining about, she was living in New York and she went to California, and then she came back to New York. She said there was no there there. There was no there. There was nothing there. The whole material world is like that. What we want, what we aspire for, what we hope for, isn't there. We work our whole life for our golden years. Oh, the golden years. Rusty steel. If you don't want to go to Coney Island, visit an old age home. If you're not feeling sufficiently depressed and you're looking for some antidote to your euphoria. Go to an older ritual and see how people in their golden years are suffering. That's another essay. So the Krishna consciousness movement is meant to... So the appearance of happiness is there because the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. In the Bhagavad Gita, the material world is described as being like a tree with its roots up and its branches down. So where do you see that kind of a tree? You see it in the water. When there's a tree on the bank and you look in the water, you see the tree, but it's upside down. That means it's a reflection of the real tree. It's without there's this idea that everything in the world is illusion. You know, there is no world here. Nothing is real. It's all just imagination. Nothing exists really. It's all just an illusion. No, it exists, but it's not what it seems to be. It exists. I mean, I'm here, you're here. And even the idea of happiness is here. And the things that seem to give even, it may not be, yes, it's here, it's just not what we expect it to be. It's not nothing. It's something. It's just not what we think it is. The material world is not what we think it is. It's not the place where we're going to be happy, not the place where we're going to live happily ever after. We're not going to live happily ever after. We're going to die. That's the first thing. And they live happily ever after. Until they die. But the spiritual world is the place where everyone lives. And the material world is the reflection. Prabhupada's term was perverted reflection. Roots up and branches down, that's perverted reflection. It's not the real thing. Or, looking at it another way, when something's reflected on the water, it's not steady, it's breaking up. You know, the wind blows and whatever you're looking at starts to go to shimmer and disappear. Because it's a reflection. If you see something beautiful or desirable in the water and you try to grab it, well, that's not going to work either. It's just a reflection. So it's real. If you see a mango reflected in the water, it's real, but it's a real reflection. It's not nothing, it's something. But it's not a real mango. You put your hand in and try and get it. You're not going to get it. But why is there a reflection? Because there's a tree. Unless there's a tree, you can't have an upside down tree reflected in the water. Unless there's actually happiness, you can't have a picture of happiness here. Unless there's actually happy ever after, living happily ever after, you can't have the idea of it here, the false promise of it here. So it exists, but it exists in the spiritual world. And we're looking in the wrong place. We're looking in the material world for what's not found here. In the spiritual world, the actual pleasure is there. How do we go to the spiritual world? By a change of consciousness. What is that change? In the material world, Srila Prabhupada explained, every one of us is trying to exploit the material energy. And we see that grossly. You know, we know that there that Exxon and Monsanto and all those mega corporations are trying to exploit the resources, the natural resources of the earth. We know that. We know that the big powers are trying to exploit, the capitalists are trying to exploit the workers and so on. So we know that there's a sort of large-scale exploitation going on. They're trying to exploit us. We know that. That there's people, we're all around us, there's people trying to exploit us. They want our money. They want our vote. They want our bodies. They want our minds. They want something. And so they're trying to look no farther. Anyone here experienced exploitation? A lot? From all sides? When you walk out the door, you're going to see, billboards and advertisements and the whole world is full of exploitation. And then we say, well, I'm a nice guy. I don't work for Exxon. I'm not in politics. In fact, I work for a peace organization. And I spend my spare time trying to save endangered species. But subtly, this idea is there that I want to exploit. Why do I want to do this charitable and philanthropic work so that we'll have a better world? And in a better world, I'll be happy. I find it difficult to live in a world where there's all this inequity or all of this, that. So I want to make it a better world so ultimately I'll be happy. Even in our most selfless moments, there's a certain selfishness that's running underneath it. And when it's less, when it's less, when it's very, very less, we think this person is the same. And when it's more, we think this person's a, don't want to say. But it's always there. If we look deep within ourselves, we'll find that I'm always thinking about others in terms of what they can do for me. In personal relationships and marriages, sorry to say. In business deals and social organizations. We all have this persistent mentality. I want to enjoy. And we get a hint that by giving service to others, we'll enjoy more. Okay, that's the more advanced person. The gross materialist wants it all for myself, for himself. Right? He wants to be number one. He wants to be on the top. There was a, what was that lady? Having it all. The one is old by now. She's dead, probably. A very popular book at one time, Having It All. So, okay, we say we're the gross materialists. So those who are more advanced have discovered that by serving others, they get greater happiness. The kid finds out that when he gives a present to others, he enjoys even more than getting presents. And that goes on to, in terms of philanthropic work, in terms of charitable work, in terms of social welfare work. But then generally it's humanitarian work, and let the animals go ahead. Let them be exploited cruelly. Okay, no. I care about all living beings, the animals, the trees, the porpoises, the human beings. Just expand that further. Just expand that further until you come to the point of Krishna. Because when I'm serving my family, then I'm in competition with your family. When I'm serving my team, I'm in competition with your team. When I'm serving my country, great patriot, it is chef in your country. When I'm serving human beings, I'm neglecting the animals. When I'm serving one section, I'm neglecting another section. But when we come to the point of Krishna, everyone is served. The comparison in Bhagavatam is pouring water on the root of the tree. Whole tree, all the leaves and branches of water. We don't have to separately water each little branch and each little leaf. Whole tree is water. So that's the point of ultimate satisfaction. Now I'm serving, it's relatively better that I'm not just serving my family, I'm serving my community. Relatively better than that, I'm not just serving my community, my country. Relatively better, humanity. Relatively better, the world. Still better, the absolute. The supreme entity that includes all other living entities. That's Krishna. Our natural position is to serve Krishna. That's the perfection, the culmination, the highest point of service. When we serve Krishna, the competition is over. I'm serving my country and your country's expense. Because Krishna is the central point for everyone and everything. Prabhupada gives the example that you throw a rock in the pond and generates all these very nice circles coming by. And then you throw another rock and it does the same thing, but the circles from the first rock interfere with the circles from the second rock. Everybody's throwing rocks in the pond and the whole thing is going to appear. But if we could all throw rocks in exactly the same point, you'd see concentric circles, concentric circles, concentric circles, concentric circles. Any number of tosses. It will all be harmonious. So Krishna is the central point of harmony. Krishna is the central point of service. Krishna is the central point of happiness. Krishna is the central point of everything. So the goal of this Krishna consciousness movement is to come in touch with Krishna, but not Krishna alone. Krishna with his energies. And the supreme energy is his pleasure energy. And we're not just abstract. We were talking about this yesterday. Ravindra Swarup was in Princeton discussing this subject, that we think in terms of, in Western philosophy especially, abstractions, the good, the beautiful. In abstract terms, beauty, goodness, truth. But in the Krishna consciousness philosophy, we have goodness, we have beauty, we have truth, but it's all specific. It's not truth in the abstract, goodness in the abstract. These things have their personal, explicit manifestation in Krishna. He was relating that he was talking to some academic people or students and describing something about the pastimes of Krishna or the appearance of Krishna. He said, "You don't take that literally, do you?" Yeah, you take it literally. Why should truth and beauty and everything be all abstract? You're not abstract. Right? You're not abstract. You're explicit. You have your personality, you have your form, you have your likes, your dislikes, you have your capabilities, your individual attributes. Why should the absolute be less? I have my good qualities, you have your good qualities, and when you come to the Supreme, he's got nothing. Krishna has everything. And it's all explicit. He has his form. People say, why blue? Why is Krishna good? Prabhupada's answer? He likes it. Why is Krishna Ratsikata? He likes it, that's all. You can't question Krishna. He likes it. He's independent, he likes Bhikkhu, that's all. Now, Krishna likes whatever he does. He doesn't have to herd cows, he likes it. He doesn't have to dance with the gopis, he's not under contract. He likes it, that's all. So his enjoyment is not in the abstract. It's specific. Oh, then it's limited. No. Krishna can be every kind of explicit. When he wants to be a coward boy, he's a coward boy. When he wants to be a king, he plays as a king. When he wants to be a fish, he's a fish. When he wants to be half lion, half man, he's half lion, half man. When he wants to be play as a tortoise, he becomes a tortoise. When he wants to be a sage, he becomes a sage. He's not limited. He can do not only whatever he wants, and all right, you chose it, you're stuck with it, he can do everything. He wants to enjoy pleasure. So he expands his pleasure energy, and his pleasure energy has a certain height, a certain color, a certain dress, certain features. But the pleasure energy expands. That just like we like to have a girlfriend. But there, if we had a choice, we'd like to have lots of girlfriends. But Radharani, as the girlfriend of Krishna, is giving pleasure to Krishna. But to give more pleasure to Krishna, she expands. Why should you only have one girlfriend? Let me expand and you could have thousands. And they'll all be different. They'll all be different. All of the gopis have someone is expert in singing, someone is expert in making garlands, someone is expert, of course they're all expert in everything, but they all show some specific feature. They also show some specific feature. Someone is very, among the gopis, there's right wing and left wing. Just, we said this material world is the perverted reflection. We have right wing and left wing politics, and we have, you know, great men who die in Massachusetts. And left wing and the right. But in the spiritual world, right wing and left wing is there. The right wing gopis are very submissive, they're very sweet, they never object to anything that Krishna says. Like in Vaikuntha, where in Dwarka, Rukmini is there. She's the most submissive queen. Just whatever Krishna wants. That's the right wing. Then there's the left wing. Always quarreling, always objecting. Proud. Satyabhama, another queen of Krishna. You gave Rukmini a parijata flower. What about me? All right, I'll give you a tree. It's another kind of enjoyment. Some of the queens are easy to please. Some of them, they're always hard to please. It creates taste. Just as in eating. Chapatis. No. Feasting means there's so many different things. There's a sweet taste. There's hot taste. There's an astringent taste, things that make your lips pucker. There's a bitter taste. In American cooking, we don't have bitter taste very much. But in India, Kerala is there, and Methi, there are different kinds of vegetables, which are bitter. And bitter is another taste. It's a very pleasing taste when you have the sweet and the hot and the pungent, the sweet and pungent and the bitter and all of these different tastes mixed up together, then it's really nice. And then you can combine those tastes in different ways. If something's a little hot and a little sweet and a little, something just completely sweet, but with a little bit of pungent, that's cooking. You mix up all different things and you get all sorts of varieties of taste, not just one thing. In the spiritual world, every variety. You know, people think Krishna consciousness, you're all the same. No, our goal is to attain the realm where there's the maximum expression of individuality. But that, you know, here I express my individuality by buying the 18 million pair of Levi jeans. In the spiritual world, our actual individuality is here, and it's expressed in relationship to Krishna. Here it's expressed in relationship to mind. And therefore, frustration, unhappiness, disappointment, pain, death. And in the spiritual world, we turn toward the source of everything, toward the person with whom we actually have a relationship, because we're his energy. And that's where the enjoyment is. And that enjoyment is experienced by giving pleasure. When we give pleasure to Krishna, give happiness to Krishna, we become full of happiness. That's all under the energy who's in charge of all this, who's Srimati Radhika. She's the in charge of the pleasure department. Here we have a public works department, a taxation department, Homeland Security Department, to give you a hard time and go to the airport. We have so many departments. So Krishna has his different departments, and Srimati Radharani is in charge of the pleasure department. Giving pleasure to Krishna and distributing pleasure to everyone who serves Krishna. So much so that Krishna himself, he knows everything, he experiences everything. But the one thing he's thinking, what is it that my devotees are getting from serving me? What kind of taste are they getting? What is it about me that's getting them so excited? What kind of happiness are they enjoying? I can't understand that because I'm me, I'm not them. I can't understand what kind of pleasure Srimati Radharani is getting, what kind of pleasure the gopis are getting by serving me. I just can't understand that. So then Krishna himself wants to take that role. And I'm not going to understand that unless I can have that position. So Krishna takes the role of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's a devotee to Krishna. But he's described that Antashama Bahir Kola. Internally, he's Krishna, and externally, he's Kola. Kola means golden, and Shama means black. So he's inwardly, he's Krishna, but outwardly, he's golden. Or he's Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani. When Krishna takes the mood of Radharani, that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doing? He's chanting, he's dancing, he's engaged in the happiness of serving Krishna. But that's... we have Krishna, and he expands himself, and then you get Radha Krishna. And then there are all these exchanges of pleasure pastimes. And then Krishna takes the role of Radharani, they become one again, and that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he's Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Radharani. So we can experience Krishna consciousness and the pleasure of Krishna consciousness and at its height and understand Radha and Krishna by going through the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then we can understand what is Krishna, what is Radharani, what is Krishna consciousness, and what is the perfection of consciousness.